All right, now we'll get started. Hello, everybody. It's great to be back. Saturday, I had a meal. Let's see, that was Friday. One day this week, I had each meal in a different state. I was traveling all over creation, at least the North American continent edge of creation. So it is really good to be back home and be with you guys. So we are continuing our study of the book of Visions of God. We're in Daniel chapter 7. And as I said last time, this one is not too bad, but we're getting into the deeper waters of Daniel. And the reason we're getting into the deeper waters is there are so many people, when they try to interpret what the book of Revelation means, they end up in the book of Daniel, and you'll see why. Because there's a lot of similar imagery used. And in Daniel, it's very clearly talking about the future of the world from the standpoint of Daniel's time period. It's talking about kingdoms rising and falling, and whose kingdom's going to come next, and what they're going to do. And so when people try to understand the book of Revelation, especially if they come to it with an assumption that it's talking about future to our time, they go back here and they try to take these dreams, in particular this dream we're about to do, and they go into, you know, okay, now this has to mean this, and this happened, that's this country, and that's this country, and this is this war that's going to happen, and they get into all this interpretation. Now, the first thing, you know, there's two big rules in kind of the first two rules of studying the Bible. Right. The first rule is it's God's word, and God knew what he was saying when he said it, and he said it in a way we can understand it. It's from God. Okay? The second rule is context. And the third rule is see rule number two. And the fourth rule is see rule number two. Context, context, context. If we're reading somebody who lived 400 years before Christ, actually more than that, isn't it? 500 years, 600 years. And he's saying, then a kingdom is going to arise after this kingdom. He's not talking about 2,000 years away. You know, he's talking about something that's going to happen in the relative time frame that he's talking about. Now, if he said, and there are places in the Bible where it says this is going to happen a long, long time from now. Right? Well, a long, long time could mean how long? A long, long time, right? You don't know. It probably means more than a few hundred years. How do we know that? We know that from the latter part of the book of Daniel. Later in the book, the angel's going to be telling him a whole bunch of stuff, and then he says, these are for a long time off. But you know what? All those things happened within 400 years. So we know biblically, from a biblical example, that a long time, 400 years is a long time. Now, could it be 4,000 years? Yeah, it could be. I mean, that's still a long time. But the point is, we've got to let the scriptures interpret themselves and use context. Now, also, because these are very historical visions, you're talking about kingdoms rising and falling. Remember, that's the whole first thing Daniel says. God sets up kings and he takes down kings. And the point of the whole book is to demonstrate and prove that God is in control. So, you know, this has a very historical thing. And when we look at history, when we look at archaeology and history and the writings that have been done over the thousands of years, it's important to see what they said. Because if they said, that Greek Empire never amounted to much. And if I can never get my password back in here, I'll open this up. You know, then you would look at that and say, well, this says the Greek Empire was going to be a great empire. But if all history and all archaeology said it was not a great empire, then you'd have a question. But see, that's not the case with the Bible. That's one of the wonderful things about God's words. It's true. And so if it sits there and says there's going to be a great kingdom coming from Greece, and in fact, you look at archaeology and history, and in fact, there was a great kingdom that came from Greece, then what does that do? That validates the truth of the Bible. Now, Daniel chapter 7. Daniel, notice, now where did we leave off? We left off with Daniel in the lion's den under what king? King Darius. Darius was a Mede. or the Medes and the Persians. What happened to the Babylonians? In particular, Belshazzar. He got killed. And before that, the very night that he was killed, what did he see on the wall? Right? Handwriting on the wall. And then it said, Belshazzar was killed, the kingdom was given over to the Medes and the Persians, and Darius ruled in Babylon, and ruled the region of Babylon. Then the very next thing we looked at was Darius set Daniel to be one of the three governors. And then a bunch of governors got together, a bunch of the leaders, they didn't like Daniel, so they said, we got to find a way to get rid of Daniel. So they tricked the king into making a law that no one can pray to any god or man except you, O king, for 30 days. No one sure well that Daniel was going to pray 3 times a day to God. They catch Daniel, they put him in the lion's den, God spares him, right? So what's interesting is the very first verse of this chapter, this is chapter 7, that was chapter 6. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Here we have a bit something that's out of historical order. And what we're going to see here for the rest of the book, really, is we're not going to see any more history so much as we're going to see a collection of Daniel's visions and dreams. Okay? Now, you know, when you're writing... how are you writing? You're writing in order, right? Linear. One word after another, one sentence after another, one chapter after another. If 5 things happen at the same time and you want to write about it in a book, what if you can't write, okay, this line is the first thing, this line's the second thing, this line's the third thing, okay, next page, 5 by 5, next page. You don't do that, right? You say, let me tell you the first thing that happened. Now, back over here, this also happened. Then back over here, this also happened, right? So you have to take something that was happening at the same time and write it in a linear fashion. So this is what Daniel's doing. So this is now this is Daniel's recording. It says he wrote down the dream. And he's telling us when it happened, the first year of Belshazzar. So this is before, this is during the time of the Babylonians still, Darius took over, the Medes and the Persians. So let's read. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and the visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Suddenly another beast, a second like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up from among them, before whom 3 of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated, and his garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. And a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. And I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain, and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all nations, peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by, and I asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Now I'm going to stop right there for a second. So that's a pretty fantastic dream, right? This is what he sees. He sees the great sea, okay, which would be in their view, the great sea was the Mediterranean Sea, and the four winds of heaven stirring up the sea. And then out of the sea comes four beasts, great and terrible beasts, right? And so to start with, there's a couple of things you're going to hear in this. You've got these beasts, and then it says what? Then I saw God in heaven on his throne, and I saw someone like the Son of Man coming with clouds, and a kingdom was given to him. You know, so this is very relevant to you know, it isn't just some picture of something that happened back in the Old Testament. When it starts talking about the Son of Man coming with the clouds, we know who that is, right? The only person ever talked about in the Bible was doing that is Jesus. So there's all this stuff going on here. Great, fantastic visions, horrible beasts, vicious, conquering, devouring, stamping, lots of violence. And so now let's read what he says about the interpretation here. Verse 17. Those great beasts, which are four, are four kings which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceeding dreadful, with his teeth of iron and his nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. And the ten horns that were on his head, and the other horn which came up before three fell, namely the horn that had eyes and a mouth, which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints, and prevailing against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different than the first ones, and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, and shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. And then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. The court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve him and obey him. This is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. Okay. So, what do we have? First of all, we have a little more information about the fourth beast. And notice, what does he say? What does the angel say? The first thing he says, verse 17, those great beasts which are four kings which arise out of the earth. Now, if it just stopped there, you'd say, okay, I'm looking for kings. But then if you read down verse 23, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all other kingdoms. So we're not just talking about individuals here. We're talking about kingdoms. We're talking about empires. And we already know a few things about this, even by looking at it, because we have the context of the earlier part of the book. We're going to see more in the latter part of the book. This is a very significant vision in the map of Daniel, because in the map of Daniel, what you have is every vision ties onto every other vision. Some of them are expansions. It's like zooming into a map to get a little closer to see what was going on. Some of them are broad overviews. So the first vision we had, remember, was this guy. He was the great idol. This is Nebuchadnezzar's first vision, the one where Daniel came to prominence because he interpreted it. And he said there was a head of gold, arms and chest of silver, belly and thigh of bronze, legs of iron, and toes of iron mixed with clay. And remember we said that, first of all, he said those are kingdoms, they're empires. He said, and you, O Nebuchadnezzar, are that head of gold. And after you shall arise a kingdom, not as great as you, but then after you shall arise a kingdom that defeats them. And then the next kingdom it's going to have the strength of iron, and it's going to crush and trample, and it's going to trample all the other kingdoms. And then the kingdoms, but it's going to be weak, because just like iron doesn't mix with clay, there's going to be strength in it, but weakness in it. And then, what happened? What happened to this in his vision?
A mountain to a rock and destroyed it, and the bottom is the Romans.
So here you go. Here's this stone cut without hands out of a mountain, flying down, hits the thing on the feet, and destroys it, right? Turns it into dust, and it blows away. Now, he said, first of all, you, O Nebuchadnezzar, are this head of gold. So here you have the Babylonian. There's Babylon. Then the next one is the kingdom that followed them, which is Medo-Persia, the Medes and the Persians. And we read about that in Belshazzar's feast. And Darius the Mede took over. After this, the empire that succeeded the Persians is the Greek Empire. Alexander the Great in particular, and those who followed him. Then the last one is the one that followed them, which is Rome. And then we know what this is. This is a stone cut without hands. Who is our rock? Jesus. What does it mean to be cut out of a mountain without hands? Who's doing the work?
God.
Right. And it says that that stone grows into a huge mountain that fills the whole earth. Well, hello there. I didn't know she was there. Oh, we got two of them. Oh, my. That's so sweet. You know, I'm going to be a grandpa for the first time in January, so I got to warm up with this. I've already got it, believe me. Okay, so we got this. Here, this, you know, this vision, that's all it said. It just said, here, there are going to be these empires that come. And then God's kingdom, this kingdom that God creates, is going to take over. Now, what's interesting about this dream, first of all, is how many beasts come up from the sea? Four. Right? There are four beasts. Well, hold it. We have four sections of this. Maybe it has something to do with it. Maybe it doesn't. Right? The word, number four is used all over Scripture for all kinds of things. But, you know, it's something to think about. Then it says, now listen to the description. First of all, where do the beasts come out of?
The sea.
The sea. You'll also hear them coming out of the earth. And you also hear this in Revelation. Whenever you hear that, these are earthly, carnal things. Right? And here you go. The very first one, he says, the first beast was a lion with eagle's wings. And its wings, I watched until its wings were plucked off, and it was made to stand like a man. And the heart of a man was given to it. Now, does that ring any bells? In the book of Daniel. What's the second vision that Nebuchadnezzar had? You remember the great tree? With, you know, food and fruit for all. And it's cut down. And the stump is there, but it's protected. And then later on, it's brought back. And Daniel tells him, he says, King, this is about you. Basically, because of your pride, you're going to be turned into a beast. You're going to be given a beast's heart, beast's mind. And you're going to be driven from men. And you're going to eat grass like an ox. And your body's going to be wet with the dew of heaven. For how long? Till seven times pass over you. And remember we talked about this. Your hair is going to be as long as eagle's feathers. Your nails are going to look like bird's claws. Until you acknowledge that God is in control.
It's a possibility of 7 years.
Very likely it was 7 years. Now, what do we have here? We have a lion with eagle's wings. Lions are one, symbols of royalty, but we have a lion with eagle's wings. What?
We have a man that was given a beast's heart, and now we got a beast that's given a man's heart.
Who's set up on his feet like a man and given a man's heart. Guess what, folks? He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar. He's talking about the Babylonian kingdom, Babylonian empire. That's really straightforward. Then he says the next one. He says the next beast that comes up is a bear. And it was raised up on one side. Now this doesn't make any sense really until you get to the later vision where he talks about the goat and the ram. Because he says very plainly who those are. But he says there's this bear and he's got three ribs in his mouth. And he is, and said they told him, arise, devour much flesh. Now, the interesting thing you find about this is I haven't found any particular references to why a bear would reflect on the Medo-Persian Empire. But later on in Daniel, there's another vision he has where he sees a ram that has two horns And one horn, the later horn, grew up bigger than the first one. It's lopsided. One stronger than the other. And then a he-goat with a single horn, which he says is the king of Greece, which is Alexander the Great. Now we know who Alexander the Great conquered. He conquered the Persians, the Medes and the Persians. Okay, so we know that's historical fact. Here you have a bear that's hiked up on one side. It's not balanced. It's lopsided. There you have a ram who's lopsided. So very likely we're talking about the same thing here. So let's just assume that for a minute and see how things go. So we said, okay, if the first one here is Babylon, the second one is the bear, then what's the third one? A leopard with four wings and four heads. Now, what can we make out of that?
That reminded me of the last of the that thing with four heads that was on wheels that could float around and run around.
You're talking about the cherubim, right? The chariot of God. It is interesting too that some of these things map to that. But here you have a leopard. Forgive my sorry leopard. I tried to draw a four-headed leopard with four wings sometimes. Here's a leopard. Now, what do we know about leopards? If you just think about natural leopards,
they hunt at night.
They're stealthy. They're swift, right? What if you had a leopard with wings? Would you expect it to be swifter? What if you had a leopard with four wings? Would you expect it to be zipping along pretty good? Okay. We'll get to the heads in a minute. Remember, this is a kingdom. So hang on. According to this vision and our understanding of it, the next kingdom that should arise is Greece. In particular, the kingdom of Alexander the Great. What is Alexander the Great known for more than anything else? As a warrior. He's a conqueror. But how did he conquer? Did he pull up to some, you know, did he pull up to some place and just say, hey, we're just going to lay siege to him for 10 or 15 years and we'll just starve him out? That's not how he worked. He was known for swiftness. He used cavalry, and he moved exceedingly fast. In fact, you'll hear this in other places. In this other dream I'm telling you about, the he-goat, it says that the he-goat didn't even touch the ground when he moved. He says, this is Greece. I mean, he says in that dream, he says, this is Greece. So here you have a very swift animal with four heads. Now, what are the four heads, I wonder? Well, right now, we don't know. Right now, in this part of the story, we don't know. What we find out later, because in the same dream, and I almost had to tell them together, but there's just not enough time to cover all of this in one session. The dream of the ram and the he-goat is Greece, is that it had a single horn that defeated the ram, and then his horn was broken off. It says when his horn was strong, it was broken off, and four horns replaced it to the four, pointing to four directions. Now, what we know, what do we know about Alexander the Great? What do we know about history? How old was he when he died?
About 30.
Yeah, 30 or less, right around that time frame. He was a young man. He was strong too. He wasn't defeated, right?
No, he died.
He died of probably some combination of disease and drunkenness from history's account of how he died. What happened after he died? Who took over?
Four groups of leaders.
Ah, because he had four generals. These are his four generals. And his four generals divided up Alexander's kingdom. And none of them ever became as strong or powerful as Alexander, but they divided up the kingdom. So here you have, in that vision where it tells us this he-goat had one horn, which was broken off when it was strong, and was replaced by four horns. And here we have another image of Alexander, a swift running leopard with four heads. It's at least plausible that they're talking about the same thing, that these are different kings. Each one of these heads, one of the things you'll see heads and horns on beasts. If they have multiple heads or multiple horns, they very often are talking about kings. Not always, but very often. So here you have priests. Now what's going on here? Can you see what's happening? We started out with this really high-level version of just successive empires, this first dream. Now what are we seeing here? More detail, but detail about the same progression. It's talking about empires rising and falling, the theme, you know, the theme of the book, gods in control. By the way, what happens to the lion? It was made to stand on its feet, and its wings were plucked off, and it was given a heart. Who did all that?
God.
Right. This is the theme of the book. God's in control. He raises up kings and he sets down kings. What about the bear? It says, they told him, arise and devour much flesh. Who's the they?
Probably the angels.
It's the ones who are in charge. It's God and his messengers, the angels. When you have a clear depiction here that God's in control, and he's setting these things up and taking them down. Now, if we've gone down this so far, and these things have lined up, we can expect that this next piece he's talking about is probably talking about Rome. But, you know, let's just hold that for a second. That's just kind of an assumption. So, let's look at this next beast. Now, it doesn't say what kind of a beast this was, you know, as far as species. I drew it more or less as a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Okay, for two reasons. It said it had great teeth, and it stomped things with its feet. So I said, okay, T-Rex, it makes a decent model. Could be, you know, could have been a saber-toothed kangaroo, for all I know. We just don't know. And looks like we have some visitors here this morning coming in. Anyway, he says there's this great beast, and it has great iron teeth. Great iron teeth. Not just iron teeth. Great iron teeth. Do you remember? I mean, when it talks about stuff like that, it's really accentuating it. Now you have something with iron teeth. Well, first of all, you got a clue. It's iron. Legs of iron and the strength of iron. What about this kingdom that was talked about here in the first vision? What was that kingdom able to do?
Conquer everybody else.
Yeah. Break them to pieces. Just as iron breaks everything into pieces. Remember that's what it said? So when you see iron, you should think it's maybe talking about the same thing. Maybe talking about the same group, so that matches up. You got all these teeth. It's very strong. It tramples everything to dust. And that's what it said it did here. Broke in pieces all these things. Good morning.
Good morning.
We are in a series called The Visions of God. We are studying all the visions and dreams of the Bible. We started in Genesis. We will proceed to maps. And we are currently in Daniel. So we're in Daniel chapter 7. Now, here you have this very interesting situation. This picture's drawn with this creature with great teeth, stomping things, very powerful, overwhelmingly powerful. And then it says something about its head. It says it has 10 horns. It says it has 10 horns. Okay, so it has 10 horns. And then it says, and later a little horn came up. And before it, three horns were plucked up, were taken out. Okay, that's kind of strange. We don't really know what it is, but, you know, I mean, at this point in the story, we don't know what it is. And so we say, well, what's going on? So here, three horns go, and one horn comes up, and then it says this horn gets to be bigger and stouter than its fellows. And he says, I looked at this horn, and it had eyes and a mouth. Isn't that strange? This is a strange dream. And the mouth spoke pompous words, great things. Okay? So this is the thing, this is the account, right? This is saying what's going on. Now, if we look at this, I'm going to tell you a couple of different interpretations people have made of this. Almost nobody argues that the first vision with the statue of gold and silver and bronze and iron, that the head maps to the Babylonian kingdom and that maps to the lion, the Medo-Persian Empire maps to the bear, the Greek maps to the leopard. When you get to the fourth beast, people want to have all kinds of different interpretations. And the reason they do, really, frankly, I'll tell you, the reason they do is they have a preconceived notion of the answer. So if you're just reading this and looking at it, and all you've done is read Daniel, I mean, you can read Ezekiel if you want to, we've studied that for, you know, 5 months. But if you're just in the Old Testament and reading in the Old Testament, and you see this, and then you see this, you'd say, okay, whatever that thing is the next kingdom is coming after the Greeks. That was the Romans. And all these horns, you know, it's talking about horns here. It says later that these horns are kings, that these 10 horns are 10 kings. And the horn that comes up later is another king that came after them. So you'd say, okay, so these must be kings of Rome, emperors basically. And if you just looked at it that way and you didn't go any further, you'd say, okay, well, you know, that makes some sense. It says they're kings, so these are kings. This is a kingdom or an empire. These are kings. You got a situation where there have been 10 of them, and then another one comes up that gets rid of three, and there you go. That's all you know. Now, when you start your exploration of these books that have all this figurative language with a preconceived notion of what they're supposed to mean, then that's going to change your interpretation. And when people come to both of these dreams, when it comes to both of these dreams with the assumption that the kingdom of Christ has not yet come, okay? That the kingdom of Christ is not going to come until the rapture, the second coming, Jesus coming back to earth, establishing his kingdom, reestablishing the temple in Jerusalem, sitting down on the throne in Jerusalem. All those things that are basically classified as premillennial doctrine, right? Where they say, hey, Jesus came to establish a kingdom. The Jews rejected him as king. So God had to come up with plan B, which is the church. And the church is just a band-aid to hang on until God decides to send Jesus back to establish his kingdom on earth again for 1,000 years. That's what they teach. Now, if you come to this with that assumption, remember the first dream. You got the Babylonians, Medo-Persians, and Greeks. Nobody disagrees that that's what those are. Then you said the Romans. You say, hold it. Okay, yeah, that's got to be the Romans because, you know, here we go. But then they say, but you know, those 10 toes down there? What they're really talking about is, you know, the Roman Empire comes, yeah, and it goes away, but then Europe grows. And sometime in the future, there are going to be 10 European nations who are all going to act together as if they were like Rome. And then the stone's going to come and knock them down, you know, the stone being, you know, Christ and Christ's kingdom. And that's going to take 2,000 years for that all to happen. Now, why are they saying that? They're saying that there's 2,000 years between some point here and the toes. The reason they're saying that is they want it to be so. It's not that it says this in any of the texts. There's no indication that there's going to be some 2,000-year gap in this discussion. None at all. And if you look at the kingdoms that arise during this time after the Roman Empire, what do you have? You have, well, let's just say, the kingdom of France, England, right? There were lots of kingdoms. What about Germany, Japan, the U.S.? You know, great wars of a scale much greater than what happened in the Middle East back here. So, you know, that just doesn't make sense. But if you're clinging to the interpretation that the kingdom doesn't come until Jesus comes back to earth and establishes a millennium, then you have to find an explanation for this because it doesn't fit your theory. So now, if you look at it, just what's happening here, and you say, he says, here's this kingdom. It's Rome. Here are these kings. Well, kings. We have history of kings. We can go take a look at the kings. Turns out, and you're going to find this more because this very same image is used in the book of Revelation. There were 10 kings. In fact, there was an 11th king. And in fact, there were more kings that came after that. But what you have here is the 10 kings that came up before this horn came up. Seven of them were emperors that lasted for a while. The last three only lasted a few months each. They didn't even last a year. They took power and they were deposed, just one right after another. And then you had the guy coming after him who got up and says, and this vision says, had a mouth and eyes and spoke great things, and he was much stronger, and he made war. Did you catch that part? And he made, what did he say? 21, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High. And the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Okay? Now, we're not going to jump to the book of Revelation yet because that's going to be later in the study. But I'll give you a couple of clues. What you have in the book of Revelation, it says, there. It talks about, there's this beast that this great harlot sits on. It has seven heads, and it has seven horns. And it says, and then there came up an eighth horn. And you say, hold it, seven heads. And this is a city that rules over the whole earth, right? So it's pretty obvious what it is in the context of John in the first century, again being Rome. But here it says there's 11 horns, and there it says eight horns. How do you get that? First of all, it says 10. What happens before this one, when this one comes up? What happens to three of them?
Short-lived.
Yeah, and they're plucked up. So if there were 10 horns and minus 3, how many is that?
8.
There's 7. And 7 plus 1, the new horn, is what?
8.
So you see, it's talking about the same situation. It's talking about the same situation, you know, 600-700 years apart in time, Daniel's vision and John's vision. And then you have this one horn who speaks great things. You know, pompous words against the Most High. Now, if you're speaking... What is pompous? What is, if you speak pompously or with pomp, what is that?
Speaking bad about him.
Well, you can be speaking bad on somebody, but puffed up, it's pride, right? It's pride. What is the sin that is exhibited over and over and over in the book of Daniel by the world rulers?
Pride.
Nebuchadnezzar gets up and says, "Hey, look at my kingdom, look at my everything I've created for all my glory." And then, you know, the voice comes from heaven and says, "You're going to eat grass like an ox for 7 years until you acknowledge that God's in control." Belshazzar, having a big feast, he says, "You know, when big drunken feast, thousands of his nobles and all his wives and everything else." And he says, "You know, we need some new silverware here. Let's go get those gold bowls from the temple of God that was taken from Jerusalem, you know, 60 years ago. And let's drink out of them." So he goes and gets the holy articles from God's temple. And everybody's drinking wine in them, this drunken party, and praising the idols that were all around them. And God says, "Okay, you read this." And he writes on the wall, and he says, "You had it. I've measured you, found you wanting, and tonight you're going to be delivered to the Medes and the Persians." And that's what happened. The sin of pride. The sin of pride. So here you have the situation where you have this guy speaking great pompous words, prideful words, against the Most High. If you're speaking in pride before God, what are you saying?
You're better than he is.
Yeah.
Smarter.
Smarter, better. If you're talking to God that way, well, if you're talking to God that way, I don't want to be standing close to you, frankly. Yeah. I just as soon be a few yards away. But do we have a case like that in the New Testament in the first century times? Do we have situations where the emperors of Rome stood up and said, "I and God worship me"?
Yeah.
Yeah.
During the first century.
A couple of times, don't we? A few of the emperors, not all of them, but a few of the emperors did claim to be gods and required worship. And what you'll find is historically in the book of Revelation being written at the, you know, basically in the last, right at the end of the first century, that in the next 100 years, and during that time then, and in the next 100 years, really 150 years, worship of the emperor became required to the point that you could not buy or sell without giving a pinch of incense to the emperor, worshiping the emperor's idol at the marketplace. We know this because we have situations like Polycarp. Right? Polycarp was a Christian in the first century, but actually he did live in the first century. He also lived in the early part of the second century. And he refused to offer incense to Caesar. Right there before the Roman guard. So they took him to jail. They brought him before the court. They said, "Polycarp, we're going to burn you at the stake if you don't worship God. And you're an old man. Why don't you just do this and spare yourself the trouble?" And he said, "You know, I've served God my whole life, and he's always been good to me. Why should I be false to him now?" And they burned him at the stake. So this is what's being talked about. Here you have Domitian, basically. And Domitian, you know, you had Nero, Vespasian, Titus, and Domitian, and then you have some of the other kings. You have this emperor that he's talking about here is claiming to be God and makes war with the saints. In other words, great persecution of the saints at the time. And then it says the saints win. Now that's the whole theme of the book of Revelation, right? If you look at the book of Revelation, the whole theme of it is God's people wins. You know, you get into lots of details, but the top level message is pretty plain. So here you have the story that's going on. So if this, in fact, is Rome, and this is an emperor of Rome who's claiming worship and persecuting the saints, then let's read the rest of the story and finish up. It's almost time. (clears throat) 25. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law, then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. Now, we heard that before, didn't we? A time, times, and half a time. So we'll talk more about that. That shows up here in Daniel, and it shows up in the book of Revelation. But if we understand from the dream, that seven times we're going to have to pass over Nebuchadnezzar, we're talking about years, but we're at least talking about time periods. And we're talking about three and a half of those time periods. And so there's going to be a period of time where the saints are given into the hand of this emperor who claims to be God. You will find yourself from around 90 AD to around 150 AD in that range. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. What's going to happen to that empire? Destroyed. Consumed. Then the kingdom and dominion and greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given over to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Okay. Doesn't that line up with this? With the stone? Same kind of thing. This kingdom is going to come to an end. The stone cut without hands destroys it, grows into a great mountain which fills the whole earth. Now, when you read the book of Revelation, you will find a very interesting set of markers. There are three main sections of the book, as I understand it. There's the first section of the book, which is primarily the letters to the seven churches, which are, as I understand it, to be delivered to the seven churches of the day, right there, right around the Isle of Patmos, which is, Ephesus and Smyrna and Thyatira and Laodicea and Philippi, all those places. And then there's a section in between, which I'll talk about at the end here. And then there's a section at the end which talks about the great white throne judgment scene, basically the judgment of all the earth. This is all the dead, small and great, all come together, books are open, the righteous are judged, the unrighteous are judged, they go to heaven and hell, it's all over. In the middle is bookmarked by two very interesting sections of scripture that I believe this is what this is talking about, this time period. The first one happens right after the letters to seven churches. It says, I looked, and under the throne there were all these saints who were beheaded for their testimony. And they cry out to God, and they say, Lord, how long will you wait to avenge our blood on the earth? And what does God say? Wait a while. It says, wait a while. Each one was given a white robe. Wait a while until those who will be killed like you have been completed. Then when you go on in, and I believe it's around chapter 18 when this happens, I don't quite have that all memorized yet. You get to the end of this middle period of Revelation where all these apocalyptic visions are, and it says, and there was a great number of saints who were saying, Lord, you have avenged us. Praise you, Father, for you have avenged us. So you have this, well, how long are you going to wait to avenge us? And then you have avenged us. That middle section is all talking about that and that. The persecution that they underwent during the Empire of Rome. And historically, that's borne out. We'll talk about that when we get there. So, any questions? Too late. We don't have any time. No, it's okay. Any questions? All right. Next time, we will continue in Daniel, and we'll get on with the next vision. Like I said, the water's getting deeper.